The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
9 months, you're a monk. Work as hard as you can, and if it goes well, well then you can enjoy, you can have as much social life as you want when the job is done.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit HRI.ie.
And you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing on this, the 18th of June. It's Richie McCormack here with you. Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball, brought to you as you heard there by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit HRI.ie, hashtag every racing moment. The great Johnny Ward joins me in studio. We haven't been together in months.
Haven't seen you in a long time. Your beard has gotten more beardy.
I figured I'm not intimidating enough at 6'5" and with a constant scowl on my face. How can I make myself look more intimidating? I went, I'll go with the thatch on the face. The last time it was
badly thatched, like it's not, it's kind of like a leaky roof.
It is a little bit. The last time I had it this long, a well-known RT presenter once asked me on a night out, was I from Afghanistan? Now, I'm not going to name that person here now because
if this were a Curb Your Enthusiasm joke, you'd clearly infer who he was, but like, well, you know, he's, but your beard's a bit like mine, like it's, we're not really made for beards, or we're too, our faces are too nice.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that you've been at home for a year and you can't manage to really, or you just don't care about shaving properly.
You don't, like, I'm wearing, Johnny, I'm wearing shorts, for God's sake. I've come around to the world of the shorts because
you're enjoying working from home?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty enjoyable. It's, you know, you get things done, you're able to have dinner locally and you don't have a half an hour bus trip home every night. I mean, that's not bad.
Just on the shorts issue, I'm sure Gary Carroll has strong views on this, but when I used to go, like, if I went to the Royal Oak in Kilmainham back in the day with shorts and flip-flops, like, everyone was just looking at me. It was like, it's 25 degrees or whatever. Now, I probably shouldn't have been in the pub. But it was like, you know, I'm wearing shorts. It's summer. It's just Irish people have a strange... It's like you're not on holidays. Cop yourself on, kind of.
It's the flip-flops, to be honest with you. That's what did it. I'm still going around with socks and runners on, John. I have a bit of, you know, pride in myself. Knock around with toes out.
I can imagine Gary Carroll in flip-flops on holiday soon, toasting his Royal Ascot win. That's a segue for you.
There's a segue. Gary Carroll joins us on the line, who has had a pretty good week this week, picking up his first winner at Royal Ascot. Gary, you're on your way to Limerick this evening. A couple of rides there. Shorts or no shorts on your way down there?
No shorts, unfortunately. Now, I do like wearing my shorts and flip flops when I can, but it's, I guess, strange looks going into races wearing them today.
Yeah, I mean, you're not necessarily going to the right environment if you want to wear shorts and flip flops. If you're going to places with occasional heavy ground, etc., and a lot of horse waste, let's just put it that way, knocking around.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank God it's not too soft today in Limerick. But listen, thanks for having me anyway, lad.
You're very, very welcome. I mean, what a week to get you, because riding Quick Susie to victory in the Queen Mary Stakes on day two at Royal Ascot, I mean, that was a hell of an achievement. Give us a sense of the day, give us a sense of the ride, because we were talking off air before you came on, having 12,000 fans back inside Royal Ascot this week from, you know, a viewing experience has made all the difference. I'd imagine for yourselves as well, it has been an absolutely massive thing to have that many people there.
Oh, a huge... It was surreal, really, just to come in and the walkway in and all the people in clapping in. Like, it's over a year or nearly a year and a half since we had crowds like that. So if I could have extended the walkway in, I would have really enjoyed it.
Is it a bit of a culture shock going from, like, you've been racing, what, we came back in the summer, I think it was, and around this time we were really getting motoring again after the initial lockdown and everything has been behind closed doors. Is it a bit of a culture shock to go back to going from zero to 12,000 out of nowhere like that?
It was, really. And even going into the races and having to queue to get in the gate and people everywhere, and it was just a strange sight of the races, but a welcome sight.
You can kind of go two ways with that thing. We were talking about normality off air and whether or not, you know, things like this feel normal still anymore. Like, was it a case of, you felt a bit almost anxious heading back into that kind of environment with that many people present, or was there almost like a weight off your shoulders gone, right, we're getting back to normal here now?
No, it was lovely to see, and like, racing is a public sport, and the sooner they open it up to public, the better, because everyone loves going racing, and people geared their year round going to Ascot and going to Cheltenham's and Galway's and all this. So it's great to see it starting to get back to normal again.
Yeah, give us a sense of the ride itself aboard Queen Susie. What was your expectation going in versus what played out?
I was quietly confident. I thought after Nace, when I got beat, I thought it's a very quick filly, a very good filly, and I thought going back a furlong would be no problem to her. After Nace, I was very confident in going to Ascot. I thought she'd run a big race. Look, it's hard to be confident, hard to be sure, but I thought she'd run a really good race.
How many rides have you had at Royal Ascot, Gary, actually?
That would be third, I think. Third or fourth. I had one for Sheila Lavery, one for Johnny Levins, and I might have another, but no, only a couple.
I suppose that's the context as well. Yourself and Gavin Cromwell teaming up at Royal Ascot, like, you know, Gavin wouldn't have had massive success yet on the flat, and I suppose that tempers confidence a bit in that you're kind of both going into the unknown a bit.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing about Quick Susie, she went there, she's probably the best form of the race. Mm. There wasn't so many with group form in it. And listen, everyone's entitled to get a good horse and wants to manage it well. And like, my job was easiest yesterday or on Wednesday. Gavin, he was the one that trained, did all the hard work. All I did was keep her in a straight line there for 5 furlongs.
We've seen him like win champion hurdles and, you know, win grade ones or whatever over jumps, but I don't know, like a winner of Royal Ascot at group level is just something else for him as well.
Unbelievable. And she was a relatively cheap purchase as a filly and first season sire. She just had been a revelation from day one when we got her, and she's just gone from strength to strength. You'd be hopeful she'd be able to step into Group 1 class now.
That's the thing, Richie, as well. It's like, yeah, racing gives you, if you strike gold, even on the flat, you can get a relatively cheap horse that just, for whatever reason, genetics transpire that this is actually quick, and she's quick, like, and that, like, it, these aren't fashionable connections. These are, like, you know, these are hard-working jockeys and hard-working trainers who wouldn't have that much success at top level on the flat at all, and that's, I love when a plan comes together like that. That really shouldn't happen, you know?
Yeah, like, fantastic. Kind of you put all the gratitude and all the praise onto Gavin. What was his feeling going into the race on Wednesday?
Gavin's Gavin, he doesn't say much. He leaves the riding to me and says he's happy. He says she gets the line wet and she's in good nick, so best of luck.
What's he like to work for? Because I know you've obviously, you know, ridden a lot of horses for Gavin down through the last few years.
Gavin is, I consider him as much of a friend as a boss or a trainer. He's a great team of staff. I'm in there twice a week. I enjoy going in there. It's a bit of fun and a bit of gossip, and I go there even during the winter there. I school horse away, and I like being involved. I love the jump side of race as well, so I like being involved with that. But he's going from strength to strength the last couple of years. Spent a lot of money upgrading his gallop. He built a 50 horse barn, water walkway, and he's upgrading every year now. It's paying dividends.
Seems to be. I mean, it does take, we don't necessarily, like your average commoner garden punter doesn't necessarily get the sense of the gap that you have to bridge to go from being, you know, a Gavin Cromwell up into the upper echelons, let's say, without wanting to downplay what he's done so far, the upper echelons of trainers. The money, the efforts, the size of the staff on hand, I mean, these are all huge things that play into the successes that we've seen from you this week.
Yeah, but that's it. What I sort of see with trainers is there seems to be a gap. The trainer that has 40 horses, it's hard because you need the staff for that, and you mightn't have the numbers to get the big amount of winners to keep the whole thing going. It's either you need to get very big or stay small enough that the expense is not too high, and Gavin's just breaking into the next level there now. So, it was great to be part of it.
I've often made the comparison with the Kilkenny hurlers, and maybe the Dublin footballers are slightly different, but the Kilkenny hurlers, I think people were bored that they were winning all the time, but it definitely drove everyone else on. Like, it brought all of these counties up. Galway, when Galway competed against Kilkenny under Anthony Cunningham, they had this massive physicality that I hadn't really seen before in hurling, and they had to up their game. They had to up their game tactically. They had to up their game, and for Gavin Cromwell and all these trainers to compete, they just have to improve. And I think the competition in jumps and flat in Ireland has been so high in the last few years. I don't know what you think, Gary, but I think it's brought, like, Gavin has radically changed. Like, he was basically a farrier who trained the odd horse. He became good at training, but he's radically invested in facilities. He's put so much into it in terms of effort. You know, even off the pitch, he's kind of, like, dedicated himself even more to training. And I think it's just the likes of Aidan O'Brien, you know, and the others are improving standards under them.
Oh, without a doubt. Gordon Elliott's there, up this game, and he either shipped up or shipped out. If you go into Gavin, he's a calibre of a rider he has compared to when I started there. The great riders there, which is, I think, is a massive help in charge. Good owners there that are starting to invest, and new owners come along the way. And like, he spent a lot of money at the Land Rover sales just last week, and he's starting to get the firepower to get a better quality of horse that he's always a chance to get one, you know.
And just on, and I, like, this isn't me saying it at all, because I've always been a big fan of you, but he could have probably booked a higher profile jockey than you for an English jockey or whatever to ride the horse in Ascot. I've seen examples this week where regular riders were jocked off, and I guess that was never the case with him, because he's a loyal man.
No, he's a very loyal man, and look, Gavin, to be fair to all his jockeys, they all get a chance, and unless the new connections, the owners, the new American owners wanted someone else, Gavin wanted me and me only. So it's great to know that, you know, great to know his confidence in me going into a race that I can ride as I want to ride the 50.
Have you always had that confidence in yourself? Because I suppose you're known as a second jockey to Ger Lines down the years, and you know, not often would you have the ride maybe befitting your ability in these group races. So a race, a result like that at Royal Ascot must be like just so pleasing, because you, like, I keep telling people that don't really follow racing, jockeys' lives are not fashionable in the greater part. A lot of hard hours, very very early starts, long hours, a lot for little reward, travelling and so on, and sometimes then on a moment like that, maybe does it make it feel like, yeah, this is why I'm in it.
Ah, no, sure. Look, I'm doing it for long enough. I don't know anything else. On a day off, I don't like sitting around anyway, so I'm a goer. But Ireland is so hard with Aidan O'Brien and now Joseph's after stepping in. It's a fairly closed shop, and it's just so hard to get the. You can get winners and that, but to get the higher quality horse, they're hard to come by, and especially some of the trainers I ride for, if they come across a nice horse, it's worth so much money. They get hard to hold on to it, you know, that they have to sell a lot of these lads. So it's great for this Quick Susie stay in the yard, and the likes of Joe Murphy's on fire now again, and Gustavus Weston showed what he's been showing us the whole time. So for them to hit the target all this year, it's been brilliant.
You mentioned Joseph O'Brien there. You were champion apprentice jockey alongside him back, what, over 12 years ago now at this stage?
Myself, Joseph, Ben, three-way tie. It's like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah, coming across him at that stage.
Research, Richie. Like, I absolutely totally forgotten about that.
There's a massive team that goes into this as well, much like there is there in Gavin Cromwell here, Johnny, as well, you know. But, like, did he show back then kind of an inclination towards training like his dad, or was he? Did this strike you as a completely wild right turn from him?
From Joseph?
Yeah.
When Joseph was riding, I suppose he was completely focused on his riding, and particularly his weight and that. But look, the situation he's in, a natural move for him, and especially when they'd Pilltown there for him to go to. And he took the step very well, and he's a very good trainer. results are showing.
Gary, I'm fascinated by your own background because obviously you're steeped in racing with your own family, with your dad Raymond in particular. But what I find interesting is, like, you came to apprentice jockeying quite late. You were, I think, 18 when you were going into it, and by the time your dad had retired, I mean, you were still a kid, I think, and or you hadn't even been born by the time your dad had hung up his cap for the last time. Like, it strikes me as an odd thing. Like, you never got to see your dad in his pomp, and he was a pretty good damn jockey himself.
No, that's right. I think you retired the year I was born, or maybe I was one. But
enough for him to say, there's more things going on in life. I must dedicate myself wholly to this great son of mine.
That's it, yeah. He knew from the start. No, I think we just come to the end of it, and it was tougher back then as well. The weights were a lot lower as well. He came to the end, and it's funny, he won a couple of Group 1s, he won a Ledger, and he won an Oaks, an Irish Oaks. There's not one photo of him riding a winner in the house or anywhere to find. I think someone went to the trouble of making a tape of some of his top 20 winners, something like that. And I think he watched it once and then taped over his Carnation Street or something.
Oh my God.
So he wouldn't have been like one for let's sit down, we'll turn off the telly and let me tell you about your outlad and how well he did in his jockeying days. Like, he would never have regaled you with stories or anything like that unless really prompted.
Never. No, I don't know a whole lot about his riding career, to be honest. I hear stories from other people, but never from him. But I suppose it was one chapter in his life, and he did well in it, and he was happy. And I think when he finished, he closed that chapter.
Do the stories other people tell you about your dad tally with what you've heard from him yourself?
People always told me he was a very good jockey. He won a lot of big race winners, and he was good, and you can see some of me.
Did that kind of humble nature and that humility kind of not delay your inclination towards riding yourself, but did it, do you think if he had been more forthright about his own career that you probably would have got started sooner?
No, it wasn't that. To be honest, he didn't want me to be a jockey. He knows how hard a life it is and the highs and lows of it all. But my parents want me to do my leaving cert before I did anything. So I kept going to school and actually rode pony races years from his 4th, 5th and 6th years in school, and I finished my start, and I think I had my first ride that September.
How do you broach that subject with your parents then, if they're so keen for you not to get into riding?
Especially when one of them has already been exactly that.
Yeah.
I suppose we were all riding ponies never in the whole time, and they wouldn't let me work for racing hard until I finished my junior start. And I started riding out for Mick Halford for that summer. The following summer, I went pony racing with Shane Foley and Martin Hardy one day, and I picked up the 3 rides. And after that, I was pony racing every weekend, and I started riding a lot of winners that were successful, and it's just nearly a natural progression. And I just, Mick Halford wants me to get my license out, and I did, and never look back.
What's that pony racing world like? Because I don't think it's one that necessarily a lot of people would be exposed to.
I loved it. I loved it at the time. I did most of my pony racing up the north, and used to travel up every weekend and stay. Shane Foley and Martin Harley, we'd stay in Martin Harley's house, Letterkenny. It was great fun, and it was great risk, and we used to make fun for young lads. We made plenty of money at it as well, so that's why we loved it.
Yeah, it's one of the jewels of the Irish racing. Like, it's kind of the B side that nobody listens to or whatever in terms of the TV and papers and the radio and the media and that, but like all the amount of jockeys that came through and the amount of jockeys who had parents to drive them 600 mile round trips to realise their dream, and the parents never look for anything in return. And I don't know, Gary, it's like that aspect of it as well, because it's quite like a geographical thing in that, like, you could be based in Cork, but you'd be riding in Donegal or whatever, and you see these parents like investing in the dream of their kid, like, and some of them paying off, obviously.
Yeah, well, my parents never came. Remember, went to the pony race, and my dad came. There was a meeting in Monastrevin once, and I'd six rides. He came and watched the first three races. And you know, pony racing, they're tight tracks and wheeling around the bends, probably going too fast and that. And he said he watched a couple of races, and he said that he frightened the life out of me. He got into the car and went home. And I rode the next three winners, and he wasn't there for them.
Has he improved any in how he looks on at your own career, Gary?
Has he what?
Has he improved? Has he warmed up to it a little bit more recently?
Oh, no, that's just the pony racing now. He's no problem watching the horse racing now, but pony racing is a spectacle as well. And to be honest now, yeah, I don't know if I go back and ride in the process now anymore. When I was young and mad, we used to keep going into them tight bends at speed. Be lucky, you better get a bicycle around them.
It is mad, yeah. Because, like, I don't know if you're watching. Did you watch Jumps Girls when it was on, Gary?
What?
Did you watch Jumps Girls when it was on telly that time?
Jumps Girl, I don't think so.
That's very helpful, because you wonder what I'm talking about here. But they showed Rachel Blackmore falling in the Grand National, and like they did this uber slow mo in HD. At like a Grand National, so there are 40 runners or whatever. Rachel, obviously a woman, she's riding the Grand National, which in itself, and it was the most cataclysmic fall, and it was just like, that's what they're at. Like, that's, so if you're a parent and your son or daughter is out riding, like, we think of the reaction that we had to the Ericsson thing, but it's so dangerous, and these lads just take it as normal. That's how, and when you're a pony riding, obviously, Gary, it's normal to you as a 12 or 13 year old, yeah, this is just how it is.
Yeah, it's mad. But you don't take the that age younger, and you grow up and whatever, go riding over jumps. But I suppose it's flat, it's a lot safer, and obviously there's the danger of tipping heels or something like that. But when you're young and careless, you don't see any danger, so you just keep kicking.
When you were, you know, you mentioned that your folks wanted you to do your Leaving Cert and complete your Leaving Cert before you actually, you know, got back fully into the world of racing. Like, was there anything that your Leaving Cert was pointing towards, or was it just a case of ticking a box and then you were going to go on and try and find a yard somewhere to help along?
No, I quite enjoyed the school, actually. I wasn't as bad at it. I had architecture as my number one and my CEO, and I actually got points for it.
How many points for architecture?
I got 430, so I don't know what the course was.
That's very impressive, and I mean this in the nicest possible way. Everyone in racing has no interest in school, and a lot of them don't do the Leaving Cert. 430 is actually very, very impressive for somebody who's basically was going to be a jockey. Like, it's really impressive.
Yeah, I remember I was dieting for the week of the Leaving Cert, because I was racing that weekend, so I was doing my Leaving Cert hungry.
That is, geez. Yeah. I actually, like, I can't get my head around that, because that in itself is like a stressful week, 2 weeks, however it is, that, you know, depending on what subject you're doing. So to be essentially starving yourself and trying to keep yourself down to weight for racing during the midst of that, like, that, how you even came away with 4:30 is beyond me.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah, as Cranberry, you could upgrade that result.
What's the weight management now? Is it more difficult as the older you get, or have you kind of settled into a rhythm of it?
I suppose I'm long enough at it. I know my body and I know what I have to do, and it's never easy, but it's never like it's hard either.
What's your way around it? Is it purely diet, or is it diet and a bit of cardio, or how do you balance the two?
At both, yeah. You try to eat somewhere right the whole time. obviously when time allows now, I like to take away or like some nice things. And I do a lot of running, and I'd run most days. I do probably 7 or 8 K on the treadmill most days. I'm racing, and if there's no racing, I might go for a run outside and that. And if I need to use the sauna, so be it. But no, I try to do as much extra. I do plenty of extra.
You literally can't sit still for a second, can you?
No, it's a danger if I do.
It's actually, which is completely paradoxical, because if you talk to him, he's extremely laid back. Like, he doesn't get too, you know, stressed or whatever. Like, it's, which, yeah, I've always found you like that anyway, Gary. Maybe I just don't know you well enough.
Yeah, well, I think that's important. Like, I see some lads, and, like, racing is a game of highs and lows, and, like, there's probably more lows than highs, and get some people, and they're right, a big winner, and, like, it's brilliant, and they're cloud nine, but next thing, they have a bad day or a bad ride, and you're picking this fella off the floor, you're hiding ropes, like, so, like, if you try to stay in the left head the whole time, life is easier.
Just the mentality aspect of it as well, like, you can't really afford to dwell on those either good moments or bad. I was going to say just bad moments, but the good moments as well, because like you mentioned today, like you've had the high of Royal Ascot and racing in front of 12,000 fans, having a winner there, and the next thing you know, you're plugging away, you're going to places like Sligo, you're going to places like Goran Park, you're heading to, this evening to Limerick. There literally is no time to rest on your laurels like that.
That's it. Yeah, the bandwagon never stops, so it keeps turning. Went to Leopardstown yesterday and met every bit of traffic in Leopardstown yesterday, and I got bet on Zahi of John McConnell's, like, from one high to a low, really. So, like, that's racing.
What's the plan for the rest of the year then, Gary?
Oh, we're busy now. Racing will keep going pretty busy until the end of September anyway. It's been my best start of the season so far, so it'd be lovely to keep it going. It'd be lovely to hit another one or two nice horses along the way, but every year I try to beat my tally from the year before, and I'm well on target at the minute, so please God, we keep it and get the best year we can.
Are there any major targets on the horizon for you between now and the end of the flat season?
Gustav, after Group 2, he said he won the Greenland. He's a couple of Group 1 entries. The Doncaster Sprint could be a nice race for him. I'd love to get his head in front in a Group 1. Tough, it's a step up, like, but he's at the winter Group 2, and he's there's not a whole lot sometimes between them sprinters, so if he got a bit of luck in a day, he could do it. We'd love to keep Quick Sympathy in the country until before the Breeders' Cup. I think she'd be a good ride, and the likes of Achieve Lee Park. If she took on the Colts in the Phoenix Stakes, I think she has a very good chance of getting allowance. Like, she's probably one of the quickest fillies in the country at the minute. So her future could be bright if we could keep her here.
It has been lovely to see Joe Murphy's year as well. The two of you dovetailing so well, and like the form he's on, unbelievable. I think he's more winners this year than last year already.
Oh, definitely. Last 2 years combined, he's just been unlucky. The bad run, horse with a dirty nose, and the infection in the yard. Horses are back and really hit the ground running. And the two ways that his nice horses and are well, and then some of the horses that were running last year are sort of well handicapped, so it's great to be involved, and Joe's very loyal to me, and he's been very good to me for the long time, so great to pay him back.
Listen, Gary, we'll let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this afternoon, and we wish you all the very best of luck down Limerick this evening, and indeed for the rest of the year and beyond. Gary Carroll, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Les.
Cheers. Yeah. There you go. That is Gary Carroll. As I say, a couple of runners down at Limerick this evening. And Friday Night Racing is brought to you, of course, by Horse Racing Ireland. Not only Royal Ascot this week, Johnny, but it's obviously been a fairly tempestuous week, I will say, here at home on the racing front, because I mean, we had Ger Lyons talking about this subject on the show earlier on in the week, but Paul Kimmage's piece with Jim Bulger has raised eyebrows and a lot of questions, I'd say, as well, over the course of the last 5 days. What have you made of the entire situation?
I've mixed views on it, really, because, you know, it was quite poetic justice, you might say. That poetic flair ended up absolutely bolting up in the first race at Royal Ascot, because Jim Bulger is clearly not drugging his horses, or if he is, he has some neck, because he wouldn't be going out and saying this. You know, he's had a very clean operation, and he's made his point to me. What he said to Paul Kimmage, he's more or less said to me, obviously off the record for a while now. And it was an article that did a lot of damage, I think, to Irish racing, because the implication was that drugs are rife, of which there is literally zero proof. You know, and I think the risks for the big yards and for small yards and for every yard, particularly big yards, to be drugging your horses at any level are so great that, you know, it's hard to believe anyone would do it. It's also, you know, I spoke to Ger Lyons about this before I spoke to Ger Lyons about this in the last year, and I do remember him saying to me, well, I'm beating them and I'm not drugging horses, so at least that would imply that, you know, it is clean. Now, what Jim's views as expressed in the paper would be shared by people, no doubt about that, but it's like, show me the money, you know, I need to see proof of this, because, you know, this suggestion is hugely damaging to Irish racing, such that we've politicians who would have read that article and said, Irish racing is full of drugs, no doubt about it, we just need proof because of the Lance Armstrong reference and all that. Like, the comparison between cycling back in the days of Lance Armstrong and the EPO and racing, I mean, they're very, very brave. I don't see it myself at all. Do I know for sure there aren't drugs in Irish racing? Of course I don't. We've had trainers who, you know, have been done for steroids and so forth. I think we need to mete out stronger punishments when there are drug cases. But in terms of what Jim said, I have no proof whatsoever of this. And personally, I don't believe it to be the case.
Like, you're plugged into the scene more so than I would be. What has been your sense of the industry in the past 5 days after the article? I'm not obviously looking for names, but what has been the general reaction to that piece with Paul Kimmage?
Well, like, the racing industry would be very annoyed at Jim, obviously, because Jim doesn't name anyone, or he doesn't really imply anyone. He's just saying that.
Well, he can't either.
Exactly. Yeah. So he wants a level. Obviously, he can't. But, like, he wants a level playing field. But every trainer, by extension, could then be, you know, who he's talking about. And I think that is the concern. I was told of, like, a high-profile trainer in another jurisdiction who was alerted to this and is like, what the hell is going on in Ireland? We've had a situation where Irish dominance in Cheltenham has become par for the course. And if English trainers or British trainers are reading this, they'll be like, oh, sure, here we go. Sure, it doesn't matter. They're all drugging their horse in Ireland. I do not believe that to be the case. I think our drug testing has never been better. And, you know, the clean shape of the sport is paramount. I think, as I inferred earlier, the quality of training in Ireland has, like Darwinism, has just improved over time, because, you know, you're breeding better horses, you know, you're breeding the best of the best, but also training methods have modernised. I think, you know, racing is very well funded in this country, so I think we have you know, a system in place and a foundation in place for trainers to be doing better and to be, you know, you look at how well Aidan is doing, but Aidan has two sons now who are trying to be better than him. So I'd be desperately sad if what Jim says is true. It could potentially put racing back 50 years in Ireland, because, like, it needs people to bet on it, to support it. Racing will not survive without people betting on it.
It needs people to have it, moreover, rather than even the betting thing, it needs people to have faith in the sport.
Yeah,
more than anything else. I mean, we've seen that, and how other sports without wanting to again compare apples with oranges, how they have suffered in the public eye because of the whispering campaign that's gone on around them, and sometimes more than a whispering campaign, sometimes there has been actual physical proof that people have been wrongdoing in various different ways. In this case, it's a wild accusation to put out there publicly. You would hope, if Jim is really concerned about this, that he has approached the correct channels. He's gone to the IHRB, he's gone to HRI, and he said, listen, this is an issue. Maybe this should be investigated, and the IHRB are looking into it. They've said that they are. They've said that they're testing, I think they said 5,000 tests was what they're going for in 2021, which, you know, across the year is a pretty large sample. And you're going to catch somebody, you would figure, if you're going to be taking that wide a blanket.
And they have as well. Like, the IHRB changed its testing, it changed the lab that it used. And
over Newmarket now,
yeah. Like, a couple of things just on the other side. Paul Kimmage references that case of all the... that. You know, the steroids that was found, and it was never accounted for, the John Hughes stuff, never accounted for where that was going in Ireland. So that does raise question marks. Who was using this stuff? But the other thing I would say is, I think the IHRB needs to be stronger. When a horse tests positive, I think personally, the IHRB is far too willing to accept the trainer's explanation, which very often are questionable. So I think they need to be harder on stuff like that. When the horse tests positive, I think they need to give stronger punishment. But what Jim sort of implied to be this unlevel playing field, I have no proof of that whatsoever. And I would like to think if that were the case, I'd have no interest following racing. And I follow it day in, day out. If what Jim implies is true, I'd leave the sport in the morning, and I think 100,000 people would with me.
Yeah, there seems to be... It's not as if things come across as being a massively unlevel playing field at the moment. There does seem to, you know, we do have our big trainers, and there is something of an arms race in terms of how, you know, big yards are and how many resources people have. But in terms of how those horses are treated, like, there doesn't seem to be any scope to say that one yard over another is outperforming or outperforming, you know, as being an outlier in terms of their previous form.
How would you just keep getting away with it if that were the case? It just does not add up. I mean, the horses are tested so often. The top trainers generally have access to the best resources, the best pedigrees and all that. Jim Bulger has had an outstanding career, an outstanding year. He's clearly not drugging his horses, so I would like to think the others aren't as well. But one thing I would say is Paul Kimmage is going after this. He's had lots of articles this year on it. He's dedicated an awful lot to racing. Some articles much better than others, I would say. You know, so at least I don't think he would argue that the racing media isn't hard enough on this. And as a journalist myself, I would probably agree with him that we kind of tend to go along with the day to day, and we're just interested in who won the last race and so forth. And Kimmage is a brave journalist from the outside looking in. I definitely laud him on that. And I think Jim has raised this issue now, and if this issue is true, surely it'll be found out to be true.
Yeah, we'll leave the appraisals of Paul's journalism for another day. But it is, like, it's not a story that's going to go away, but you would hope that it's going to be treated in the right manner, and that the right channels are going to be gone through if we're going to get to the bottom of Jim's accusations here. Now, Jer's tried and true strategy of picking more than one runner for the Toast 10 to follow bonus races paid dividends at Royal Ascot yesterday. While Stradivarius failed to deliver any points for the lads, of course, with Subjectivist doing the business for 58 points, allowing Jer to overhaul Johnny and gain some ground on our own old Tom Malone buddy as well. You can visit tote.ie for a 10% boost on all Tote dividends at Royal Ascot and on all Irish and UK racing with Tote Plus. We've had the Coronation Stakes today. We were lucky to get the go-ahead really in Royal Ascot today after the rain that they had.
Yeah, like, it is climate change, I think, again. Biblical rain, like, absolutely, like, really hot all week, then biblical rain puts the meeting in extreme doubt. But, you know, I think everyone has really lauded Ascot the way they've dealt with, you know, the pandemic is still there. There's so much rigmarole to go through. The Irish have come over. They've been really well treated. And we have another smashing card again tomorrow, which I think will go ahead. And I hope Irish authorities have seen enough that we can kind of ease back to you know, people going racing over here. Yeah. Because we have obviously the Irish Derby coming up next weekend. It's going to be a sanitised affair again, excuse the pun. And that's not bad, actually.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I'll let it go, yeah.
Hopefully. I don't think you and I were a sanitised affair today. I think our racing debut went well.
I had the sheep dip as soon as I came in here, so I'm pretty clean.
Do you remember that foot and mouth? Yeah, dipping
your feet and everything. In the day, yeah. Like. Who have you gone for in the Coronation Stakes?
Who have I gone for in the Coronation Stakes?
Pretty Gorgeous is where it says in front of me here.
Yeah, I thought she was disappointing, to be honest, at the Curragh when Empress Josephine won. I'd tend to go with Empress Josephine. I think she should have won better at the Curragh, and I'd have question marks over Pretty Gorgeous at this stage in terms of you know, she missed the guineas in Newmarket when there wasn't really great chat about her. I thought she was disappointing at the Curragh, so I'll go with Empress Josephine.
Tom's gone for Snow Lantern in the big race of the day. But yeah, Johnny, that is where we'll leave it for this evening's Friday Night Racing.
Great to see you.
And you. It's been an absolute pleasure. We should do this again sometime.
Yeah.
I'll come in on a Friday. Yeah. I might even trim my beard for the next occasion. Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetZetGo.ie.